Hi, this is Deke Deekster. I'm introducing my recording of the We Media Fringe event, held at Westminster University, May the 3rd, 2006. Many people couldn't get to or afford to get to the conference, which was hosted by Reuters and the BBC. 800 quid a ticket, that's hardly surprising. So it was nice of Robin Hammann to organise it, to get some serious speakers along, and to generate enough interest to occupy our time between 7 and 10. Thank you, Robin, and here's the hour I recorded.
Okay, fine. And then I kind of forgot about it for a few weeks, and about last Monday or Tuesday, I suddenly realized that We Media was a week away, and I started getting all these strange emails from people saying, hey, you know, can I come? And it was at that point, kind of Tuesday afternoon, that I decided, well, if people want to come to an event, maybe I should see if I can find some speakers. So I started emailing some people. I do have some co-conspirators, most of which are people inside the BBC, some of which are outside the BBC. The people who are within the BBC helped out on the premise that this is not a BBC event. It isn't a BBC event. Nobody at the BBC is paying for it. My boss is over there somewhere. I did not use any BBC time to organize this event. Nor did I abuse my BBC email address to convince Mandy to help host this event. We'll just forget I said that. But we did come up with some great speakers, and I wanted to thank Ian Forrester, Kevin Anderson, Lucy Huberman, Richard Sambrook, and Paul Evans, a guy named Tall Skinny. Where's the tall guy? He's easy to spot.
Yep.
Some guy named Alfie I've never met. And in fact, of the speakers tonight, I don't think I've ever met any of them, which is quite a fascinating thing, really, because it shows that this is an event that a lot of people believed in, and especially Mandy at 0101. And, you know, a big thanks to her for hosting tonight's event. A big thanks as well to the people who decided to come along and speak. Interestingly enough, I've gotten away with only giving them about 30 seconds worth of brief, which is, can you come talk to us about interesting stuff that you know a bit about? And they've all agreed to do that, so I don't know what we're going to end up with. I'm sure they're all going to be interesting. I have had the opportunity to have a beer with them all tonight, kind of collectively. And they do have some interesting ideas that they're going to share with you. We've also got some student journalists and journalists who are paid as well, wandering around, some podcasters, a guy with a really wonderful-looking camera over there, and some interesting people here. I think, looking around the room, that about 50% of you were probably at We Media itself today. The other 50% of you weren't, and that's exactly what I was hoping for this evening was, well, basically a group of people who maybe wouldn't normally get together for an event. Hopefully you all brought beers. Hopefully you also all brought a few quids so that at the end of the night when I pass around a bucket to help pay for the security guard, you can toss a few quid in there. And if anyone happens to have a nice corporate check and they want an invoice that says, you paid Robin Hammond some cash for undisclosed services, I'll be happy to provide. If you want that, there's plenty outside. Sorry, I just embarrassed someone I don't know. So we have a presenter who I met 10 minutes ago. He seems to be doing a fantastic time, so I guess I'll go ahead and let you start introducing the various speakers. For those of you who are covering this event in some way, I would really love it if you could email me or somehow let me know that you've got some stuff out there, because it would be great for us to be able to put together kind of an archive of text, photos, podcasts, video, whatever it might be that you're putting together. But hopefully you'll all enjoy tonight, and hopefully this will be the last time I have to stand up in front of the microphone and talk to you. And hopefully you'll get to meet some interesting people tonight as well. Thank you for coming.
Hello again. So, Robin, perhaps
your URL.
No, I was trying to remember. I'm the opposite of Dave. I can remember real names, but not URL. So, CyberSoc.
Yeah,
would be the place.
I will find it there so we can get it up.
That's the URL. If you want to send me a message, let me know where your stuff is.
So for all your podcasts, everything I say is released under a Creative Commons license, and you may take any words from that and put them back into order and put them to a nice sparkly backing track and send them to cybersoft.com for the various mutant media that we hope come out this evening. I don't know all of the speakers this evening. I know some of them, and those that I do know I would be tempted to be rude about in their introduction. So it's probably better to adopt a philosophy of asking the speakers to introduce themselves rather than subjecting you to more of my lame sarcasm. So, our first speaker this evening is Dr. Chris Yap. He is the head of public sector innovation at Microsoft, and he will explain in more detail what that is. Please, round of applause.
Hi, I'd like to add my welcome here. Apart from my day job at Microsoft, I'm a member of Mandy's advisory board. Here, trying to look at how we make 01 a success in its own right, but actually offer it up as a role model for the way in which we engage in the reskilling of the creative industries. I shall try and think about where we are in terms of the development of this industry and some of the challenges, I think, that we look over the next 10 years. I've been in the IT industry now for 26 years. I've been on email continuously since April 1978, that's 28 years. And you know, everybody keeps telling me this industry changes faster than any other industry. Actually, sometimes it looks quite slow when you're on the inside of it. The term convergence, as far as I can trace it, was coined by Koji Kobayashi, who later became the chief executive of NEC in 1962. His autobiography, Computers and Communications, indicated that. I joined the IT industry back in 1980 from the Financial Times, so I joined from the media industry. And convergence has been next year for a long, long time. You know, we've seen it coming, but it's here at last, and it's a reality. And if I contrast what the IT industry was like when I joined a quarter century ago and now, what we were trying to do then, and what a lot of the computer industry was about labour substitution. What we were taking jobs and automating them. And what you were doing was replacing people by computers. Sometime in the last 5 to 7 years or so, what we've seen is the technologies have become cheaper, more ubiquitous, and more available to consumers. The crucial thing that we've missed is now that instead of trying to replace people by computers, what we're trying to do is enhance productivity and creativity of people using technology. And the real challenge and the real shift that we've seen is this move now, that as these technologies have become more and more, it's 10 years ago the debate was about access to technology. It was about making sure that everybody had access to this technology. The truth is now that the real issue is about everybody is a content creator and everybody needs to be engaged, not just in accessing the technology, and not just being a consumer of these technologies, but actually contributing. And a lot of the debate around here is about, essentially, are we on the verge of democratising creativity? Is creativity ceasing to be a monopoly of the major corporations that think they control content and creative content? And are we all becoming engaged in this debate? The real challenges I see going forward now is we're approaching a position in the next few years where we'll have 1 billion people on the internet. The interesting thing is, when I look at statistics on blogging, it appears to be as concentrated as the media are in the traditional world. And the trouble is, there's often a dialogue of the deaf between the sort of the BBCs and the Skies about these sort of people, and the people that think somewhere out in the blog sphere, everybody can blog everybody. Actually, if you look at the top blogs, you've got 1 million hits a day or 1,000 a week or whatever. Actually, it's pretty much as concentrated as the old media is concerned. And actually, the trouble is, we've got to start listening to each other seriously. Because the real challenge to all of us here, and I think for those of us involved in the UK economy, is the UK is in a tremendous position to be a power engine of creativity to make sure that in 20 years' time, 7 billion people on this planet have access to this technology and are creating content that's relevant to their lives, are engaged in communities that enrich and develop their lives in education, in skills, in health, and that. There. We have, in London, 304 languages spoken. We have most of the major countries of the world represented. We have in 2012 the London Olympics. Having the We Media conference here is a real opportunity for all sorts of people, from the traditional media and the suits to the creatives and the weirdos on both sides, to get engaged in actually seriously thinking about where we want to go. What we want is essentially not merely access to technology, but the creative contribution of every single person, whether they are 5 or 70. I was at a primary school last week up on the Derbyshire Nottinghamshire border, a famous school of 4 years ago. And what they've done is they set up a radio channel in that school, and year 5 pupils are actually now doing radio programmes and television programmes out to the kids. And we watched at lunchtime as they actually broadcast their birthday programme and their request programme. The infants have complained that it's too junior-centric and actually set up so that year 2 pupils are now creating their own programmes. They're doing AS-level digital video editing at 10. The digital natives and the rise of that community is just absolutely staggering. When you see what used to be the preserve of postgraduate white male, that's what he was, frankly, 20-odd years ago, we're seeing this going down. But the worry I have, in a sense, is that across the whole of the OECD and the major economies of the world, we have an ageing population. And the danger is, I look around here, and most of us are digital immigrants, not digital natives. Let's be honest about that. And the trouble is, a lot of the debate in the traditional media, and indeed in the blogosphere, as far as I can see, is still around the way in which this rising generation is going to change the way the world works. Actually, the people over 40, over 50, and over 60 who have engaged in this community are changing the world as well. And the trouble is, we don't have to wait for us old fogies to die out. And I think it's really important that we actually start to think about how we make sure that it isn't just the educated elite and the fringe and the creative community, but I want to make sure that every person aged 50, 60 and 70 over the next 5 to 7 years actually gets involved in the democracy debates, in health debates, in these kinds of things, and starts using these technologies to engage. And what we've seen is where these technologies have been made relevant to people, they engage with them. They're not frightened of them, and they can use them. And the trouble is, in the past, what we've had is we've had the conferences for the suits, and we've had the other things. Having the opportunity to bring people together in this kind of environment, what I hope you'll do is to engage in the networking around this and actually put the challenges. This is not about just empowering us and giving us the opportunity to network. But there's the 50 million people out there in the UK economy, and there's the 7 billion people out there in the planet. And what we've got to do is not just think of traditional media versus new media, but the question is, how do we use the power of these technologies to get everybody involved? This is the real challenge in front of us. And if we play this right, this city and this country have a major potential of contributing to that. And the real goal, I think, is 2012. Seriously. The London Olympics is the gateway to the city, the world's first digital Olympics. If we start thinking about that seriously and start thinking about the health legacy, global understanding, peace and tolerance, building the things around, what you're doing this week by meeting at the We Media Conference and these kind of events, is actually we can change the world. You're going to do it. Thank you for listening. Have a go. And my mentor was a chap called Michael Young. Lord Young of Dartington, the founder of the Open University. And what he used to say was, when people said, why can't we do it? What's the problem? He just said, just do it. And the trouble is that what we've got to do is we've got to encourage those who aren't here tonight to just do it and just get engaged and just be part of this massive change. We have the technology. We have the passion to do it. The question is, do we have the commitment as a community to engage everybody else? Or are we just going to turn ourselves into yet another elite? That's the real challenge for all of us here. Thank you for listening.
Because we started late, we are not going to bog everyone down with too many questions, but of course questions are welcome. So do we have any questions for Dr. Yap?
Yes, who's next?
Other than from his fellow speakers. If you don't...
Yes. Yeah, hi. I'm a journalist from Germany. My name is Matthias, so I'm not so familiar with what's going on here. And this very much sounded to me like what the Americans call, or probably you as well, a pep talk. But I don't know what I'm being pepped to, because problem here seems to me that, first of all, you know, I've written about conversions for a couple of years, and there was a green book by the European Union on conversions. First question is, what is it? Because to my mind, convergence was when sound was combined with film. You know, that was when convergence happened. Second thing is, you're talking about creativity and how liberating that is and what this city and this country can contribute to that. And I'm not sure whether you were speaking here as a private person or as someone from Microsoft. And or both, of course. And then my second question is it a good idea? Probably I missed something, but Microsoft is not really the avant-garde of open knowledge and or open creativity. And the question here is, what is Microsoft, or what are you going to do to enable people to share creativity and knowledge?
That's what I mean about the coffee shop principle. The heckling and the barricade. You're right, I speak about personally and on behalf of Microsoft in this endeavor. The crucial thing that I'd argue on this in terms of where, yes, it's a good tool, but it's also a challenge, I think, out there, that the crucial issue where we are, I mean, the Microsoft business model 20 years ago, 10 years ago today, 5 years' time, will be different, and it will change and it will evolve. Where we will be, I just don't know. A lot of that's going to come down to the fact that essentially the power of innovation is moving from the supplier into the user community. I mean, that's the real change that we're seeing. The business models of everybody will change. Whether you are the BBC or Sky, it will change. Whether you're Microsoft, it will change. Whether you're an IBM or an Accenture. What we're seeing is that business models are now moving to being much more consumer-centric. We're seeing that also with governments. Governments have to become citizen-focused rather than departmentally-focused. And the challenge for all of us is actually to work together to help to work out how to make a living in this world. I'm not trying to defend what we did or where we are. What I'm saying is that we're partners in this change. You know, we're a big, we're a big company. We're present in this. I'm involved in this project here. What we have to do is to learn together. I'm not preaching. I don't know what the model is. But what we will have to do is compete in that world because it will change. And, you know, the real issue about what the future of intellectual property rights looks like, how we exchange knowledge. These are political problems. They are policy problems. And the more we engage and the more we get involved in that, the more likely it is we're going to come up with sustainable models rather than having a you're right, I'm wrong, you're good, you're evil type debate. And what we have to do, I believe, is to work out how the hell we do that. And you know, Microsoft will change. I mean, there's no doubt about that in this environment. And we are changing. We have. And this being involved in these kind of things is part of that process of change. And I'm not frightened of the future. I think we're there to be engaged with it.
Okay. What about that convergence thing?
The convergence thing. As I said, it's been here for a long time. And you know, the point about it's not a question of not converged. You know, the idea of being able to listen to the radio on your mobile phone, the idea of being able to watch a video on your, you know, on whatever, all these issues on device level convergence and this. The technological convergence is providing us an opportunity where people who used to be in separate industries, you know, you were in music, you were in film, you were in television, you were in writing. The point is the skill sets and business practices and the way we've traded intellectual property in those separate sectors, it's that clash, it's that convergence of different cultures around creative content that's the really fascinating. The technological convergence, frankly, is boring. Right. I mean, yeah, the really interesting convergence is when you get somebody who's in animation, puppetry, music, film, and you put them together and they create something that you just couldn't have done without the underlying platform convergence. Christ knows where that takes us. God knows what we'll be creating in 5 or 10 years. But the point is, if we don't talk to each other and we don't meet, we ain't going to have the opportunity to do that. So I don't know where convergence will take us. All I know is it's happening.
Any more questions?
My name is Nico McDonald. I'm Brighton Consulting Centre. It's a brief point about divergence. Actually, convergence is what's happening at Chris says at the back end, which is both the business end and the collaboration end and the technology end. But in fact, real people want divergence. And I think we need to get over the late 90s hangover that we still see today, that everything's going to converge onto single devices and so on. and realise actually the real design and technology challenge is to deliver the right thing to the right platform at the right time, which actually the BBC is starting to do quite well. And then the platforms include paper, more and more paper, not e-paper, just real paper. So I think we need to hammer that point home that, you know, we media, whatever the media we're delivering is, has got to be delivered to people when they want it. It's got to be able to move between platforms and so on. And I don't think there's big broadcast companies and media companies really understand that yet.
That feels like a prescient comment rather than a question.
It was. It ended.
I just will respond to that. I mean, a lot of my work in across all this is that what we're talking about is the personalisation of services and personalisation of media. So if I just look outside, I mean, one of the really interesting, just to give you sort of day job type sort of thing that I think is quite interesting. If you're starting to look at, for instance, dealing with a big social issue like obesity and diabetes now and long-term healthcare, actually thinking about how you use games technology with young people to help them simulate the kinds of life choices they make around diet and exercise and stuff, to be able to understand the choices that they're making and the consequences these have. You need people who've got health experience, education experience, people who've got games experience, software experience. And it's then personalising it and giving that person the chance to make decisions in their own life. And so the trouble is, it's the convergence of all these different sectors, but it's actually leading, as you said, to divergence, which is the personalisation of services and the personalisation of media. And that's the thing that's really, I think, quite going to challenge us on business models for probably 10, 15, 20 years, maybe.
Divergence communication.
Yeah.
A theme that Hungry Horace failed to address to the max. I'm aware that no one wants to come to an evening where you feel that you can't ask questions, but nobody actually wants to hear anyone else's questions. So, just normally, this may be a different kind of group. We'll be going to our next speaker in a moment, but did I see a green in the hand? Oh, the same thing's been done. Okay. Fine. Well, in that case, a couple of bits of admin, but before that, I'd like to say that Joanna Shields from Google couldn't make it, apparently, to today's We Media conference. I had a rumour that Tom Coates from Yahoo was going to be here this evening, so I'm very happy to announce that Dr. Yap, Mrs. Shields, and Mr. Coates will be engaging in a bare-knuckle boxing fight for the future of the dominance of the new media outside during our break, which should be in about 25 minutes. That was my clever way of bringing up the concept of a break, which is we have 8 speakers this evening. We'll all be talking between 10 and 15 minutes, and I will prompt you for when you fancy a break. It can either be halfway or it could be after the third speaker. Who knows? Who knows where the conversation will go? That's the fun of this evening. One final piece of admin is that if you are sending anything to cybersoft.com, if you're also thinking of sending photos to Flickr, then the tags to use are WeMedia, all one word, so that the conference goers today can see what was going on around them, and We Media Fringe, so that everyone here can see their ugly mugs. And if anyone does feel that they can't hear, then do either come forward or shout, speak up, and that's fine, or even squeak up. That would also be okay. So our next speaker is a lady who has been saddled with a Welsh name, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because she is the top Google hit for her own name. It's spelled C-U-W, and it's Sue Charman. Please give her a round of applause.
Evening. Can I ask, how many people were at We Media today? Oh, good proportion of you. How many of you really wanted to go but felt it was too expensive? Oh, a few. Well, I had a really nice talk prepared for this evening that was basically going to be all about the things that media should think about before they start engaging in any kind of participatory project. And I've trashed that, and instead I'm going to talk, and the title of my talk is going to be Why We Media Sucked. have a tendency to sort of like nervously pace up and down when I'm talking, but I'm kind of tethered, so I'm going to go around in circles. I have to say, I was rather disappointed in today's events. I was asked to be one of the online curators, someone who would hang out in the chat rooms and feed back what was being said by those watching the stream and from those actually there. And this I did with no small degree of abandon. And we fed back quite a few comments that people were making, and to start with, that did get fed back into the sessions. But I felt very strongly that there were two conversations going on today. There was the conversation that they were having up on the stage, and then there was the conversation that everyone else was having on the floor in the coffee breaks on IRC. And never the twain shall meet. This is really unfortunate because the most interesting conversation was happening here, from us, from the people who are attending, whether or not they were We Media Fellows or whether or not they were journalists or attendees or whoever. And I think one of the biggest flaws of this type of conference is that you end up with this false dichotomy. And the bizarre thing was, even one of the moderators even said that, the leaders on the stage. Where are they leading me, exactly? That's what I want to say. I've been a social software consultant for the last 2 years, which is very nearly as long as anyone's been doing it. And when I first said, I'm going to be a blog consultant, everyone laughed very loudly. Now I'm laughing at them. But I just felt there was no we in We Media today. And I think this actually is symptomatic of one of the things I was going to talk about, which is respect. I didn't feel there was any respect for bloggers from the so-called leaders, she says, using sneer quotes. I didn't know they were called that until today. That's great. I'm going to use that forever now, sneer quotes. This idea that, you know, the media have some kind of God-given authority to decide what is right, what is truthful, and that us bloggers who write subjectively about our own experiences are somehow less worthy, less truthful, less credible. This is bollocks. And we all know this is complete rubbish. And to me, it was an intense disappointment to see the media, the CEO of Reuters and the BBC, all sitting there quite happily on the stage, patting each other on the back, saying, hey, everybody trusts us. Aren't we clever? What was all that about? You know, they asked the wrong questions. They had one blogger on stage like the whole day. How can you have a conference about citizen journalism without any citizen journalists speaking? Sorry, I know this has kind of turned into a slight rant, which is maybe not what anybody wants to hear, but I'm just going to get this out of my chest, really. But what I want to know is tomorrow we have to make this different. Tomorrow we have to be much, much more vocal as attendees and make our views heard much more loudly. I have, as one of the online curators, obviously I was sitting there, every time somebody said something sort of critical, I'd go, oh, there's another one. And there was a wonderful blog post, which I was going to read out, but I can't get onto the Wi-Fi here, by Hugh Fraser, who's actually here, and I suggest we all go and buy him a drink later. And it basically, if I can paraphrase, he's like, this is one of the most devious conferences I've ever been to. I'm glad I didn't pay to get in. Quite frankly, I would pay to get out. as far as I'm concerned, that's the best thing I've seen all day. But I think, you know, we need to assert control. I have fed back to the powers that be and said that tomorrow we damn well better get a voice. You know, all these people from media are going to be there, and they're going to basically think, hey, I thought I knew what citizen journalism was about, and I've been proven right, because all these people up there on the stage, all these leaders are agreeing with me. Aren't I wonderful? And we have to be the voice of dissent, and we have to be much, much more vocal. So I guess what this is turning into is a bit of a call to arms. the people organizing WeMedia, the Media Center guys, they are putting together this whole kind of action points, things people can do. And yeah, I said the first action point that we should put on the list is pull your head out of your asses. Second action point should be listen to people. Third action point, listen some more. So what we need to do is engage slightly more heavily with the people. Yeah, when you see anybody with a little, you know, headset on, who looks like they might possibly have anything to do with getting feedback back into the process, go harangue them. Yeah, get onto IRC. Again, the chat on the website sucks majorly. Just kept flaking out all afternoon. It was like in the morning, the afternoon just died. So WeMedia on Freenode is the IRC. And you know, let's go in there and stir them up a bit. You know, anybody that's here that gets blogging, I'm sure there are more people here who know about blogging than there was on that entire stage all day. Let's kick some ass tomorrow, please, but for the sake of my sanity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Personally, I just dealt with the boredom with coffee. And more coffee, which is why I'm quite wired now. Questions from the floor.
Please pass the mic, young lady.
Wow, you think I'm young? That's great. The moisturizer must be working.
Yeah. So we've all paid, sadly, the shucks of us have paid a large amount of money to keep the BBC and Reuters happy with the online media, have tried to create a world in which they want to generate money. So the only reason why you're not on the stage, the only reason why they've got one blogger who's tame on the stage is because he's generating cash for them. How can what we are doing generate cash either for ourselves or for them to keep them wanting to operate a facility, a conference like this?
Well, I think generating cash, for news organisations, the BBC is a bit of a weird one. They don't need cash, they have the licence fee.
They lose the licence fee in 3 years' time.
So. No, they don't.
I think you better check your charters.
We do not lose the licence fee, we're going to get it next year. Yeah. And I'll prepare Mac or fight for it.
Well,
they get that licence fee for 10 years,
boy. And if you don't get it, I hate to see the strike.
I think there may come a point where the BBC loses the licence. I don't think it's today.
No.
So I think they have a bizarre position where they can actually kind of like go monetizing. We don't care about that. Yeah, Reuters and other news companies, yes, obviously they do care about monetizing social media. My instinct to that is to go, I don't want to be monetized. But I think we can make... The relevance is, if they create a big social media project without understanding what they're doing, they will screw it up. And they will lose money, and the last thing they will do is monetize it. And then when they've lost money and it's all gone horribly wrong, they'll like pat each other on the back and go, see, we said it wouldn't work. And so the relevance is, if they want a social media project to work, if they want participatory media to happen, they have to talk to us. Because we know what's going on, and frankly, they don't. Very much prove that today. And how do you monetize social media? Well, this is very much uncharted territory, and in many cases, the people who do know what's going on will be able to say, well, you don't do it like that, and you don't do it like that, and you don't do it like that. And it's going to take a lot of effort and thought and imagination and creativity to achieve a model which A, makes money, B, doesn't piss people off. You can't buy a community and then expect to just exploit it. Because communities have this tendency of going, fuck you, and then just leaving, you know? So big media needs to wrap its head around the idea of this is harder than it looks. And you need to think very hard about what you do before you do it, and you need to make sure that you're not simply exploiting. You know, people are not oil to be drilled and sucked out of the ground and then turned into something else. We have this nasty habit of throwing a strop and walking away. And it's really about, you know, the third point I was going to make in the talk that I trashed was reciprocation. You have to give something back to your community. Why is Flickr successful? Because it gives something back. Why is Friendster successful? All of these big social media, you know, social networking, participatory projects give something back. And until the media learns that you can't just keep on taking. Citizen journalism is not simply a matter of, oh, we've got a few comments, oh, we've got a few photographs of Buntsfield. You know, this is the first tiny step, perhaps, on the route to true participatory media. But unless you actually get into the real nitty-gritty of what makes communities tick, how this works, what people are looking for, why are they doing what they're doing? Why are they sending photographs in? Is it just that they want the warm glow of satisfaction that their photo got published by the Bee? Is that really what it's all about, or is there more to it? Are there deeper social needs that participatory journalism deals with and actually in needs that it satisfies? Until they understand that, they are going to screw up.
Thank you.
If there's anyone from the BBC that would like to make a robust defence of that, or hire Sue. In the absence of that, it's probably worth pointing out that Flickr has never brought you Only Fools and Horses. It has never brought you New Tricks. And it has never brought you the Embassy Snooker Championships. King shirt.
I don't work for the BBC, by the way.
Yeah.
When you say they, when you're referring to big media, who precisely do you mean? I ask because standing just behind you, it's a gentleman who works for the BBC, who really does get it and is exceptionally well respected within the BBC, and that organisation is being changed by people that are within it. And do you not feel that maybe citizen journalists who are within those big companies are working to change that?
When I say they, I generally mean the people within mainstream media companies or companies who have an eye on becoming mainstream media, who hold the budgets. The people who are the wonderful Ben, who, can I say your name? Yeah, he's blogged it. He doesn't work for the BBC anymore.
He's almost.
He's in that grey area.
Oh, I'm just using my big... Oh, no.
Sorry. But anyway, the thing is, Ben...
you lie, he works for the
BBC. Ben gets it. Mr. Kevin Anderson over there also gets it. Unfortunately, Mr. Ian Forrester, he also gets it. Tom Coates, he got it. Lots and lots of people do get it within the Beeb. Oh yeah, he gets it too. But the problem is that the people with the budget who are several layers above don't get it. So those who do can advise, sit on steering committees, write strategies, write reports. If the people with budget who make the decisions don't understand what they're being told by their staff or by external consultants and advisors, you're on a road to nowhere.
Do you think Ashley Highfield doesn't get it?
Do I have to answer that? Thank you.
In the interest of time, we are moving to a different philosophy with regard to the questions, which is... all questions are welcome, am I right, Sue, until you disappear? But those questions are going to take place not in front of the microphone. Sue is available to answer your questions until such point as she hops onto one of London's buses. Because we want to move... Oh,
can I just make a point of order?
Yeah.
Because I'm another online curator, and I absolutely agree with Sue's sort of call to arms, but I would also like to say, to make it easier for us to bring in your comments to the conversation, or to the debate, make it constructive. Don't just say, oh, this is tedious, or oh, this pissed me off, or I don't like this. Tell us what we should say. They should talk more about the barriers that are being broken down. They should talk more about how local media collaborates with amateur journalists, bloggers. So try to make it constructive so we can feed it back.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Can you say who you are?
Yes, I'm an online curator. My name is Vanessa Fabiano.
And can we initiate, I mean, there are no rules this evening, but can we initiate as a rule that when you talk, you give your name, affiliation, and whether you've ever been a member of the Communist Party? but yes, to back that up, I thought that in today's conference, the points that came across more forcefully were the ones that were case studies, examples, and stuff that had happened, and the points that came across perhaps less forcefully and were able to be sorted away by the conference delegates were the ones that said things like, well, big media just has to go away. because it possibly won't. So the politer way of stating things in a more constructive way may reap more dividends among those that listen. Okay, so after the next speaker, I'm going to ask you whether you want a break. Before or after or even during the next speaker, you are welcome to come in, filter, sit down here. I understand the Wi-Fi hotspot is stronger here. I've checked it by Kensington. So you're welcome here. And now let us move into a different part of the BBC. For a while, people have been saying to the BBC, you're so authoritarian. Why don't you listen to us and let us do things for you? We want to help you and do stuff. And Ben, who's about to speak, has been involved in many of those projects. One of the projects that fit that brief launched last week, reboot.bbc, and seemed to engender the response, hey, I thought you were just going to spend money on this. Don't ask us. Go through agencies and pay them to subcontract us to come and redesign the BBC webpage for you, which proves you can't please everyone. Ben McCarthy.
So, completely forget everything that's just been said, as I am speaking today totally representing myself and not my employers, the BBC. And if you're covering this, then I'd be really grateful for you to stress that. This is my own views. BenMetcalf.com, whatever. And I'm very aware that there's a couple of fairly senior policy people in this room looking slightly nervous already, wondering what I'm going to say. But as it's yes, I am, if you haven't read the emails or blog posts, I am leaving the BBC. I still work for the BBC right now, but this is my own views that I'm just coming to talk to you about. And I'm talking about this issue because it's something I feel quite strongly about. And so let's get straight down to it. Who here uses the BBC News website? Put your hand up. Okay, now put your hands down. Who here is aware that the BBC is considering putting adverts onto its international website?
International.
Not many people, I think it's fair to say. So the answer that the BBC is considering this, and I'm a bit concerned about it. And so, like I said, I'll say it again, these are my views, my personal views, not the BBC's, but I want to raise it with you and just talk you through some information about it and get some reaction. So, the deal is the BBC is looking at putting advertisements on international access to the BBC News website. So if you access to BBC News website from inside the UK, then there won't be any adverts. But if you access it from anywhere else, there will be adverts. Just to give you a very brief background as to how the BBC internationally is currently funded within the news website, the Foreign Office gives a grant in aid to the World Service, and the World Service provides a small amount of money for any marginal cost that it takes to serve the BBC News website outside the UK, and for a small amount of journalism it takes to run a second front page, which is the international front page. So I'm a bit concerned that even though it's only international access that it affects, I think it could damage the perception of the BBC's impartiality, balance and integrity. And it's something that, having worked on the BBC News website before working on the Backstage project, concerns me quite a lot. I also think that there's quite a danger that content could become advert-friendly, which, you know, everyone's saying is not going to happen, and, you know, I have to take people's word for it, but down the line, I think it is possible. As I look at other news providers where, you know, I can name certain news websites, not the BBC, obviously, where there's been some more coverage than average on online gaming and all sorts of crazy things which are slightly advertising-friendly. It could happen, I don't know. And the problem is that the news that goes into the pot appears on both the UK-facing website and also the international-facing website. So if that was to happen, it would affect both, even if you weren't looking at the website with adverts. In terms of the editorials there, who knows? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but the minute you start putting adverts, it could happen. The other real concern that I've got is, in return for the potential damage that I perceive personally that could happen in terms of that perception, thinking about where the revenue comes back, it's not necessarily guaranteed that revenue will come back to improve the BBC News website. I mean, for example, loads of people around the world buy DVDs of The Office, but that money doesn't necessarily, in total, go back to BBC Comedy. So, again, in terms of cost-benefit, it's something to think about. I'm just trying to wrap through this very quickly because I know we're short of time. And there's other issues that just begin to spring in my mind in terms of, you know, in the future, if we ever want to have a BBC News API, if we ever want to think about offering, or the BBC ever wants to think about offering news under Creative Commons, if the BBC has good relationships with other news and media providers who are non-commercial. And of course, citizen journalists are often happy to bring content to the BBC because of its non-commercial nature. And all of these issues with advertising on the site, albeit internationally, but I believe the public figure slates about 40% of the access, could certainly harm those relationships which the BBC currently enjoys, and therefore us, the users, therefore enjoy as well. So, in terms of things to think about, I mean, my pleas to everyone are as follows. You know, if you're an international non-UK user of the website, then clearly, you need to think about whether this is something that concerns you, and if so, make your views known. But equally, if you're a UK taxpayer, which is obviously indirectly where the Foreign Office grant comes from, you know, do you feel great social value from contributing to the provision of free and, you know, as impartial news as I believe you're going to get on the internet, into areas and countries which lack a free press? And even those people living in influential countries where biased news prevails, such as North America and Canada, North America. So, if you do, then again, I think it's something for you to think about. And even if you hate the BBC, even if you can't, you despise the BBC, I mean, I have to say, from a business perspective, a big new player coming into the online news advertising environment is going to probably lessen the advertising revenues for everyone else. So, you know, not that that's particularly my concern, but if you really are an anti-BBC hater, then something still to think about, that your own preferred news website might lose out. So, in terms of things you can do, if you agree with me that it's a concern, and I certainly think it is, the first thing to do, I think, is to contact those people who are involved in the decision. In the past, there have been a couple of times when this concept has come up whilst working at the BBC, and it's always been something that the staff have been consulted with. This is something that's happening at an executive level and doesn't appear to have any staff consultation whatsoever. So the people you want to write to or email would be Mark Thompson, Michael Gray, Mark Byford, Richard Sandbrook, and Helen Bowden. And I think I'll post on my blog, which is benmetcalf.com, the email addresses for people to contact. Post about it as well. Post on your own blog if it's something that concerns you. Let the BBC know that it's not something that you particularly feel should happen. And finally, I'm thinking about whether to do a petition or not. I don't know. It's something I'm still thinking about. If you want to convince me, then maybe I'll do it. I'm just going to bring up very quickly...
Advertising.
Sorry for this pause, folks. So here it is. There is actually on the website, but I have to say I wasn't overly impressed with how well it was published. And somewhere, you can see that, is a nice example of what your BBC News website might look like going forward.
International.
So yeah, I'll be totally, this is international. So if you live in the UK, you're not going to see this. But I still think even if you do live in the UK, there is reason for concern. I, as a user, and soon not to be an employee of the BBC, I'm quite concerned about it. And, I live in the UK. Anyway, that's about me done. Cheers. Thank you.
Speaking as a person, but also as a BBC journalist, I don't think that will have an effect, and I'm as sure as that as I'm as sure of the crisp, metallic taste of Stella Artois. Ooh, gotta love that aluminium. In the interest of time, again, we're going to take one question because we have a new philosophy which is called Take It Outside. We don't want this evening to end this evening. We want people to know each other's URLs, email addresses, and continue the conversation until we're all exhausted. So that one question, we have more than one person. I'm going to suggest that you stare each other down. There's the intense stare. So my question is the most prescient.
Ben
has chosen, and let's remember name, affiliation, and whether you're ever a member of the Communist Party.
Okay. My name is Julian Hills. I work for the BBC, and I'd like to give them a little reassurance. As you can see, the idea has been discussed. There's a whole worry, concern, issue about why we, or the licensee payers, should be paying the costs for the distribution of the content beyond the UK. If you think about the costs of streaming in the future and so on, it's a big issue. The people who are contemplating this idea, and it only is a possibility, there's been no decision about it. They've done one round of research already, and they're doing a second round of research. The second round of research will hopefully ask the kind of difficult questions. There will then have to be a decision about whether the editorial integrity of the news brand is damaged by such a move. So there are a hell of a lot of tricky issues. The issues that you are worried about, the issues that other people who are worrying about, you know, whether this should be done, are also worrying about. Richard Sandbrook, who was on the platform today, you know, a lot of people are thinking about this, worrying about it. But the where we've got to is there are a second stage of research, and that then has to be kind of pulled in. People have to think about the risks and then decide what's going to happen. No decisions been taken.
When did this research start?
That's a second question, but I will allow it.
I think sort of end of last year, beginning of this year. First round of research, second round of research.
My short response, if I can, to all of this is, whether I agree or not, I mean, my only response in briefness is to say that might be great, but I think people should still let their views known. As far as I know, according to the article, 100,000 people internationally at random will receive a pop-up on their page to ask them about it is one of the ways of being consulted. That, for me, in my opinion, alone, maybe that's not going anywhere, but that's all I can see from this advert, is not sufficient, in my opinion. And I think if you have a concern, regardless of whether all of this is going on as well, let the BBC know. Thank you.
And finally, to do that, I promised you troublemakers, and we've had troublemakers from within the Beltway. I promise you that after our break, which comes after the next speaker, we will have troublemakers from out with the Beltway. But we have one more speaker before our break. Does anyone have any points of order, queries, or general comments to make at this time? Robin, that was your cue.
I just want to say there is a world outside the BBC as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of BBC parasites.
It's turning into a bit of a BBC event. From my point of view, you know, just because something is surrounded by adverts does not make it compromised. Look at Channel 4 News.
Some will say
get your head out of your
arse.
It's more than just a BBC in the world.
Sure. Well, we've got some really interesting speakers coming up later. I do have one point of order, though. I did mention at the beginning that the one thing that I realized about 2 hours before we started was that I was going to have to stand up in front of you and try to make sense of this event. Another thing that I forgot about, actually, is we have to pay a security guard. And also, I did promise the venue that if I could come up with a little tiny bit of cash, I would do so. As I said before, this event is not being funded by the BBC. It's not being funded by We Media. So if you can toss a couple of quid into this, which I'm going to pass around in a very kind of friendly style, I would appreciate it. About 2 or 3 months ago, probably 4 months ago now, I put some horrendous Google ads on my blog and very quickly realized that I make about an extra 10 or 15 quid or something like that each month. So I'm going to start off by putting 20 quid in I only expect £1 or £2 from each of you who can pay. If you don't feel you can pay, you don't have to pay. If you're completely and utterly opposed to paying, then by all means, don't pay. In fact, take £1 or £2. These guys are speakers, and it doesn't really seem fair for me to ask them to not only supply their own beer tonight, but to also pay for the venue. So I'm going to start in that direction. I'm not going to ask Alan, because he'll just embarrass me by saying something, but I'm going to send it that way. We do, by the way, have some student journalists and some other people covering the event, so please do be nice to them and talk to them and give them interviews and things if you can. Thank you.
Robin says you don't have to pay. However, everyone that's come here, whether you know it or not, your biometric data has been mapped to your address, and a van will be going outside. But rest assured, it will also be going to the outside flats of people that have not even been here and hassling them for their fee as well.
Did you say PayPal?
The PayPal account has been set up as we speak. Your pennies are welcome. Okay, our final speaker before the break, and after that, troublemakers. I promise you, troublemakers with every shade of trouser. Our final speaker is Michael Tippett, who is the founder of NyPublic.com. He will explain more to you about what that is. Please give him a round of applause.
Hi. I like to think of myself as a troublemaker, so
are you
technically I suppose I should be in this sort of break, but let me just bring this up here. So my name is Michael Tippett. I'm the founder of NowPublic. NowPublic is the, it's a news network, and all the content is created by people who are not journalists. It's the spiritual descendant of a blog I used to write a couple years ago that dealt with wireless devices and how those were going to affect people's lives. And one of the things I started doing was looking at photographs that people had taken that were close to news events and mapping them to those news events. And when I looked at what people were looking at on the site, I realized that they weren't interested in what I was writing and were just looking at the photographs. So I figured that people were interested in this stuff, and so we started the company. It's been out for about 15 months now, and we've got about 13,000 contributors from all over the world. We have people in 130 countries. We get about a couple million people every month coming to the site, and the general idea is that it's a distributed newsroom, so anywhere you are in the world, you can contribute something you've written, you can send in photographs, you can send in video, or you can sort of act as an editor and say, this is an interesting story, and I'd like people to read about it, whether it's in mainstream media, or if it's on your blog, or if it's something you've read. And the collaborative end result is the site. The site can then be looked at from the perspective of what's popular in particular channels, keywords, subjects. So the idea is to have kind of a hyper-local news channel, but on a global scale. These were some of the photographs that we recently had sent in from Nepal. These are people who were defying the curfew and were participating in these various protests. This is not that unusual for the site. We get a lot of stuff sent in from people who are in these, you know, large-scale political movements. We also get a lot of stuff from people who are engaged in sort of subcultural events that don't get picked up by the mainstream media. And then we get just bizarre, weird local stuff that you wouldn't see anywhere else. One of the things that we let people do is any footage on the site can then be used by anyone. So this photograph, if you were blogging about it and wanted an image, you would just grab this little piece of JavaScript and stick it on your site. So the idea is that anyone can contribute, but then anyone can also use the content. If you have any questions, feel free to interrupt me, because I'm kind of making this up as I go along. So
And I'd be curious to hear what you all have to say.
That's cool. Very cool.
Thank you. Anyone disagree with that?
do you have a map? Because you've got this stuff going around the world. How do I know this stuff's going on near me?
You can do a search. So we actually have this sort of location summary. I'll be honest, there's a little bit of a bug in the code and the tags are kind of screwed up, but this is some of the stuff that's happening in U.S. I mean, it's a sort of general taxonomy, so we try to tell stuff at a national level, but also at a hyper-local level. So you've got, you know, USA and Canada, but then you also have New York and Florida, and I'm sure there's stuff that's not just North American here, Europe. Oregon is not somewhere in France, Asia, Iraq. So we've got stuff coming in from all over the world. But you can also, if you're looking for a particular place, we have some locations kind of mapped out. So New York City, you can just do a search for. And that's a location that we have mapped out. But, you know, if you live in, you know, Greenwich Village or something that's kind of an informal name, that will get treated as a tag. So we can accommodate it, but this is sort of an official location. So this is the stuff that's happening in New York. So there's this guy, David Blaine, who's spending a week in a human aquarium. You know, this is a story that has been talked about in mainstream media, people are blogging about it, but here we have a bunch of photographs that people have sent in that should be appearing on the screen momentarily. So there he is. And you can kind of click through and see what else other people have added. It can be video and audio and everything as well, so it's not just limited to photographs. We also have this bookmarking tool, so if you're not a photographer or you're not on the scene of breaking news, but you think something is interesting and people should be looking at it, you can say, this is the most interesting story in the world. You can select a little blurb here, and you click what we call a public view. What that is it's a way of saying, okay, you got the mainstream media account of something. This is what I think, or this is a channel where citizen journalists can have their two bits. So it'll take the text you've entered. Damn you, Mac. So you can tag this, and again, you can tag it with location. So this is Australia. And now that's in the system. So it's like being a wire editor. So if you've got, I mean, the CNN example is kind of a bad example because that's already something that's getting a lot of publicity. But if you found something that you think is being undercovered, by all means, send it in. And this stuff all gets voted or sorted by popularity, so if something's cool and interesting, it's going to get a lot of traffic. And like I said, it varies from month to month. We get a couple of million visitors a month, so if you're interested in contributing, it's a great place to go. We have a lot of contributors, but if you've got a good story, there's a good chance that you're going to get some exposure for yourself or your cause or your story or whatever it is that you think is interesting. The examples where this has worked surprisingly well and has surprised me was our biggest success was during Hurricane Katrina. And we ended up having about 2,000 people in the affected area, which is more coverage than probably any major news organization combined. And we still get people coming back. And the site was used for all kinds of things. It wasn't just news. It was, you know, missing persons announcements, and we actually help people find their loved ones. So it's an example of how, you know, when media really is personal, it can save lives in an example like that. Again, there's the sort of story view. There's a way of looking at raw footage. This is stuff that's coming in. So this is someone who was at the correspondence dinner. George Bush and Stephen Colbert. I don't know if you saw the Stephen Colbert roasting of George Bush was very funny. There's, you know, material sent in from all over the world. and again, all of this stuff can be used by anyone. You can also identify people who you think are interesting. You can, add them to your favorites, and it'll compile a list of all the people you think are interesting. What do you guys think of this? I mean,
what kind of moderation do you do on fact checking? Anything goes.
Anything. Okay. It's a free for all. It's like Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's remarkably self moderating. People will often flag stuff as spam or garbage or inaccurate. And then we do a little bit. I mean, we don't formally, but if we come across something and we see it's obviously spam,
But how do you protect yourself legally?
You sign a user agreement that says I'm gonna behave myself. So we're indemnified. We're a common carrier. We're like the phone company. So if someone's dealing drugs with their phone, was it British Telecom? I was gonna say AT&T. It's not liable, right? So the same way, we're not liable. Yes.
If it's a popularity based thing,
right?
Say I've got an amazing story about something that's happened in a tiny village in the north of England.
Right.
You're a big thing based in America. How am I going to get noticed if it's, my little story? If, I don't have those people going to be interested in that story immediately.
Right.
So how does that work?
Well, your audience would presumably be the people that live in your community.
Right.
So they would be able to search the site by that community. They can get an RSS feed for that community, so they can have almost like an alert system. You can get email alerts for different tags. So it would almost act as a sort of alert system, like a Google watchword or something. We're trying to sort of have it be almost like a point-to-point or person-to-person news channel, where the homepage exists, but that's probably not the way that most people are going to approach the site. Yes.
Thank you very much. We have a new system in place, which is that we are going to take a couple more questions now, simultaneous with the break. If you're on the break is outside, where you may smoke, strip to the waist, spin up a box, any of the things that you wish to do, excluding, of course, the speakers. So we'll just take a couple more questions, or if you want to revive any of the questions that have come up previously for other speakers, you may do so. After that, we have our troublemakers. So do we have any more questions for our last speaker or any others? Yes, please. Tall, David, Kiwi.
Thank you. Just a word about bandwidth and storage. What do you do for your site?
We provide lots of bandwidth and lots of storage for... we have investors who think that the site's going to be worth something at some point, so they're just like, go ahead, give the shit away.
Somebody pays for the bandwidth.
Yes. Investors.